Now, more Ebling and You on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back. Jack Ebling here with Scott Eckersley, Ebling and You, 1320 WILS. Want to thank Rick Snyder for an extended interview, one of the longest interviews we have done on this show, more than 13 minutes. Before we welcome in our next guest, Scott, we were talking a little bit earlier about Johnny Damon and how much he is going to be despised in Boston now. I should tell you when I knew without a shadow of a doubt that he was going to remain a Detroit Tiger. It was last night on Channel 6 when Fred Heumann said that he was going to Boston. That told me that there was no doubt, don't even think about it, he was going to remain a Tiger. I'd like to welcome in from the Detroit News our good friend Lynn Henning. Hello, Lynn. How are you?
Hi, Jack. Very fine.
I want to talk to you a little bit about Michigan State football. In fact, a lot about that. But before that, I have to refer back to something that you wrote before the All-Star break about the Tigers not only not being a division winner or a contender to the end, but being sub-500 at Labor Day. And if they didn't play Cleveland and Baltimore, there wouldn't be any doubt about that.
No, it was really in the cards, not only, I think, at midseason, but it was throughout the year. It was even as early as camp this year, Jack, because this team, even though it was going to be an interesting year, and it has been, because of the transition with the rookies and the fact that people like Austin Jackson have become such a surprise. I didn't really anticipate that, by the way. In fact, I thought he might end up in the minors. But there was one of the surprises, and we knew there were going to be some this year as they migrated into this new team. And yet they were going to have sufficient holes to where I didn't think they could win more than 80 or 81 games at the most.
Mm-hmm.
And that isn't looking at anything with a crystal ball, because you never know what the disabled list is going to do, and we've seen certainly proof of that. But you can get a reasonable feel for a team, even when you factor in the surprises on the plus side and the injuries, you can get a fairly good estimate for what they're going to do. And this team all along was going to be just about 500 or a game or two below.
I have to ask you one more baseball question before we get into college football. And that has to do with Roger Clemens. Last week, there was a lot of talk about how he would handle this federal indictment. And he is always defiant. A number of congressmen who served on the committee, where he was so adamant about his innocence, said, hey, if he had just said, I don't want to talk about it, he's the one who asked to be there. He just seems to keep making things worse.
There's a combination of arrogance in ignorance at work with Roger Clemens. And we saw that firsthand, and we saw it tragically. He actually believed that he could go before Congress and be his stubborn, dominant, defiant self, and that was going to carry the day. He had no sense for something called law. I don't think he understands the Constitution. He certainly doesn't have a great appreciation for the Justice Department or for how the two branches of the legislative end of our federal government work, the Senate and the House, because he would have known from those discussions what he was up against.
The only thing I could think of, Lynn, was when John Vandevelde got an 8 on the last hole of the British Open, and I kept waiting for his caddy to wrap a club around his throat or do something for the guy. Doesn't Roger Clemens have any friends who can just tell him, you're killing yourself?
Look, he had plenty of people tell him in advance. He had friendly senators. He had, I'm sure, Henry Waxman told him that, look, Al, whatever you do tomorrow, do not lie to us.
Right.
And Waxman's in the House of Representatives, but I mean, he had counsel from all ends on this thing, and because he has bullied his way, frankly, over the competition all his life, he thought he was going to do it again. And how tragic, how ignorant can that be? Because ultimately, Waxman and company were going to have a choice. Are we going to listen to Brian McNamee, or are we going to listen to Roger Clemens? Because one of these two guys is lying, and which person is it going to be? There's no way you can possibly get any gray area between the charges that these men are making and the charges that the others deny. There's no in-between there. And Clemens, for whatever confounded reason, thought he was going to, again, soar above this the way he would on a baseball diamond, or the way he would with one of his comebacks after his retirement. This was cavalier in the extreme, Jack, and he's going to get exactly what he deserves, because rarely have we seen an attitude as insufferable as Roger Clemens during this thing.
And, Lynn, you know, the tragedy is that we are such a forgiving nation. We have seen it where guys have gotten 6, 7, 8 chances. And, you know, you see now Andy Pettit, he's revered, and Giambi, and, you know, I think even A-Rod in time is going to be at least people are going to say he didn't pull a Barry Bonds or a Roger Clemens or a Rafael Palmeiro.
No, and his lying now is also going to implicate Andy Pettit in having to basically go against one of his best friends.
Right.
This is sad, too. Andy Pettit at least had the character to tell the truth on this thing, but now he's going to have to testify against Clemens, and we're also going to see Clemens go away on this. I mean, as much as you can get into predicting judicial outcomes, he's going to have to spend some time, 6 months, 12 months, whatever it'll end up being here, almost certainly. Because, again, Jack, this thing is so cut and dried in terms of either you're telling the truth or you're lying. Well, he and McNamee are going to have their showdown in Maine, and right now McNamee, all the circumstantial evidence and all the physical evidence is in his corner.
Right, right. Lynn Henning of the Detroit News, our guest on Ebling and You. Lynn, you were there today at Case Hall. You got a chance to interview a number of the Michigan State players and Mark D'Antonio in the morning. I've said that regardless of what you think of this team in terms of the depth chart, and I think it is better that way, there seems to be a little different attitude. And in the past, a lot of times we have been disappointed. I don't see that. I think this team is a little bit different.
Different because they're better. And I think when you've gotten personnel on the level that they now can carry on that roster, suddenly now your attitude obviously takes a step up too. And that's what we've seen here. This is the best roster since the 1999 Michigan State team, and it's certainly deeper than the 99 team that went into. And, Jack, I'll be surprised if they frankly win fewer than 9 games. Now, I know that there are chinks in the armor. I know the kicking game could come unglued. And when you got so accustomed to Brett Swenson then, or back in 99, Paul Ettinger, these guys are very pivotal in what that final record is. And right now, this kicking game is a soft spot. Right now it is.
Right.
But it's not that they're lacking physical ability out there. We know that. But what kind of nerves and what color is these guys' blood going to be when they stare down one of these critical kicks?
Right.
But let's get back to what's going on at the line of scrimmage.
Right.
This is a terrific football team, and they've got so much weaponry. Everything is going to be better. My gosh, now that they're going to unleash Golston at that defensive end spot, that edge rusher, this is how you suddenly begin to take on Iowa and beat them, or Wisconsin and beat them. This is how you become a BCS team, is with players of that caliber coming into your system. And that's why I think, as you do, that this could be a very good autumn up there.
Well, everyone ridiculed the defensive backfield last year, and with good reason. But there were a lot of plays where those guys in non-blitz situations were covering 6 and 7 seconds.
Yeah.
And just mention to Harlan Barnett the idea of Greg Jones, who had 9.5 sacks as a linebacker, coming off one edge and Golston coming off the other. Suddenly he becomes a pretty good secondary coach.
Oh, boy, Jack, did you hit it there, too? Because we all know that that's where your pass coverage begins. And you'll get the occasional coverage sack, but they need to have that go the other way. And now they're getting some game breakers. And Chris Norman and these kinds of people that are coming into the system, this is what Michigan State lacked in terms of going from just being a bowl-eligible team to being a championship team. And we've seen this steady incremental buildup of Mark D'Antonio's recruiting, that is going to begin to pay off. The schedule certainly is inviting this year. I mean, that's another factor in this thing, as we all know. You're not going to, except every 20 years or so, maybe get a schedule as favorable as theirs. But again, Jack, I understand you still got to win these games, and the kicking game is going to be critical if that thing comes along, too. But right now, Michigan State looks like they could simply easily outscore an awful lot of that schedule.
Well, you can speak to this. You've been around covering Michigan State even longer than I have. And I think to a quarterback like Kirk Cousins, who had the best sophomore year of any Michigan State quarterback statistically, and when he says, hey, the big difference in this team is that they can go into Detroit now, and part of it is want to. There were a couple of Michigan State coaches who didn't even try to do that. And get players, get top players, not second-tier players, makes a big difference. You know, Lynn, I was talking to Tom Mack, great coach at Catholic Central, and I said, can you explain to me what's happened? What's the difference? And he said, you know, there was a time where Michigan State coaches, we never saw them. We knew from the day Mark D'Antonio took this job how important it was and that he cared about Detroit.
There was that interlude there between George and Nick when obviously Detroit just didn't matter anymore. And I don't know what happened. Well, we all know if we want to talk an hour what happened.
Right.
But the fact is, Jack, is we all know the bridges had to be rebuilt. They should have been rebuilt long before Mark got in there. To his immense credit, he has done that. And suddenly now you're doing what Tom has done forever with basketball.
Right.
You're paying attention to the backyard. You've got to recruit it. And that's the biggest difference in Mark D'Antonio. That's why 4 years ago we said, for crying out loud, now that John L. is gone, will you learn from the experience here and please hire somebody that knows how to recruit the immediate radius? And that's what Mark D'Antonio fundamentally did and knew that he had to do. And look at the dividends, Jack, as you say. You get the Golston, you get the Normans, you get the Mylon Hickses. I mean, look at the kids coming in regularly now that were, as you say, just being ignored and being shunted off to other schools before.
Lynn Henning of the Detroit News, our guest on Ebling and You. Lynn, we are now at 1,025 days since the University of Michigan has beaten Michigan State in football or men's basketball. And did you ever think that you would see another period of time where there was a danger of Michigan State, Purdue, and Illinois looking past Michigan to their next game?
No. We remember this when it was the other way around back in the 70s.
Yes.
I'll never forget this, Jack, because I came to Michigan State and graduated in 74. Until the Magic Johnson team beat Michigan down at Chrysler Arena in 1978.
Right.
I had never seen a Michigan State team beat Michigan in basketball or football. How's that? I mean, it went year after year after year after year. Yeah, they won the 75 basketball game. I wasn't there that day when Furlough had his big time.
Right.
But, I mean, this is how much of a landmark it was, though, Jack, to beat Michigan, as you recall back then. Now it's reversed, and I think the reversal is going to continue. Certainly, I think Michigan State will clobber them, frankly, this year. I would expect it the way I used to expect good Michigan teams to beat Michigan State. There's that much of a reversal. Michigan is going to have a tough autumn. I think they could break even, maybe with a lot of luck they could go 7-5. Along with you, probably, I figure it's Rich Rodriguez's last year here.
Yeah.
A new athletic director, the probation, and a season that can't be all that great is, to me, too much of a recipe for him to be able to continue. But Michigan State has really, really, really become what MSU always could be, and it took the tandem of good presidents and good athletic directors and good coaches to put it all together, and that's what we've seen.
Well, Tom Izzo will be the first to tell you that he was able to blow the door off the hinges when the University of Michigan opened it a little bit with the rollover accent and some of the other things. And that's exactly the situation Mark D'Antonio is looking at here. Not that anyone expects the University of Michigan to stay down forever. That's not going to happen. Too many resources.
Oh, no.
But for right now, Michigan State has to take advantage of this opportunity.
It does and has. And again, what I like about Mark D'Antonio's program is that, again, incrementally each year, he gets another special player
right.
over the crop that he had gotten the previous year. That's building a program. That's
right.
building something that's going to last. That's building something that can be passed off to the next coach in 8 or 10 years, whenever Mark hangs it up, and you're going to have an heirloom to hand off, not a rebuilding program.
Right.
And that's the difference now in Michigan State. We always knew this was MSU's potential and its capacity. Now it's being realized.
Well, and I think more than any coach I can recall, even more than Nick Saban, who we both have tremendous regard for as a football coach, the key word to Mark D'Antonio has been infrastructure.
Yeah.
And he has built that as well as anyone could, and we haven't seen all the results of it yet, but I have a feeling that that could be just around the corner. Lynn, thanks so much. Appreciate you joining us as always, and we'll see you at a game very soon.
Okay, Jack. Thanks much.
All
see
right.
you.
We'll be right back with our final segment. Jack Ebling and Scott Eckersley, Ebling and You, 1320 WILS.